The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about holes that block light. Dave, what kind of holes are these? Black holes?
That's a good guess, Rob, but this story is actually about real physical holes that you, say, poke in a piece of material with ion beams. And you would expect, you know, you poke a bunch of holes in a metal and you shine light on that metal, more light's going to go through than would go through before you had the holes. But what researchers found is when they took this really thin sheet of gold metal that some light could get through anyways, because it was so thin, it was like a semi-transparent sheet of gold. But then they put a bunch of holes in it, all of a sudden less light was getting through it.
Something about the waves interacting and interfering with one another, or?
Well, Rob, what usually happens when you have light strike a metal like this, it creates waves in the metal's electrons, and these are called plasmons. And these plasmons actually help shuttle light through the holes, because these holes in this case are actually smaller than the wavelength of light. And so the light actually needs help getting through the holes, and that's how these plasmons work.
So something about the holes interferes with the plasmons and doing their job?
That seems to be what's happening. You know, you would expect you've got a lot more holes and you've got the plasmons there. A lot more light should be going through the holes. But the researchers suspect what's happening here is something's going sort of wrong with the plasmons. You've got so much light actually going through this metal anyways, because it's semi-transparent, that the light really sort of almost needs to stop at the surface for a second, you know, or a quantum second or whatever, to form these plasmons. And if you've got the light going through the semi-transparent part of the metal anyways, then it's not really stopping as much on the surface of the metal, and you're not creating these plasmons, and therefore you don't have the plasmons to help shuttle the light through. And they also think that there's some interference going on with the way that they actually constructed the holes. They made these holes in these square arrays, and something about the geometry of these holes is actually also interfering with the plasmons and thus preventing light from going through holes.
So it sounds intuitively that light ought to be able to go through a hole, but if the hole is smaller than the wavelength of light, then plasmons usually would be able to help them through, but perhaps because of the geometry of the way these holes are laid out.
And the fact that so much light is going through the non-holy parts of the metal anyway.
That's causing an interference in the plasmons, not in the wavelengths of light.
Exactly. And so the next step is they want to try a bunch of different hole patterns and see if those also interfere with how much light gets through. And this may all seem like this very esoteric physics stuff, but a lot of this has really important applications for building better integrated circuits that would be as fast as, say, fiber optics, but less bulky.
Okay. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from light going through holes to blood going through arteries, this next story is about cardiovascular disease in 3,500-year-old Egyptian mummies.
How do you measure something like that?
Well, Rob, what you have to do is you have to use something called a computed tomography scanner, which basically takes x-rays from multiple angles and gives you such a detailed image, especially with these thousands-year-old mummies, that you can actually see detail and you can actually look at their arteries and see if they're blocked. And when arteries get blocked, you can get heart attacks and strokes, and obviously, even when arteries start to get blocked, you can tell a lot about somebody's health. And I think the real question in the study was, you know, we tend to think our modern lifestyle is very unhealthy with all of the fast food that we eat and our high-fat diet. And a lot of people have said, you know, we lived so much better thousands of years ago when we were just sort of, you know, eating more moderately and exercising a lot more and getting out a lot more and potentially eating less fatty foods. And researchers wanted to see, is that actually true? You know, did these people thousands of years ago, were they actually any healthier heart-wise than we are today?
But who was getting mummified? Because I thought it was only the pharaohs and people that were really, really wealthy who were getting mummified in the first place.
That's a good point, Rob. It was only the elites in the society that got mummified, and we're talking about Egyptian society here. And for the most part, these higher-ups had a very similar diet to even the poor people. They ate a lot of salted fish and bread and cheese, just like everybody else. But if you were elite, you actually had access to a lot of other types of food as well, and actually a lot of higher fatty foods like cow and sheep and goat meat. And it turns out that these foods really took their toll on these elites in Egyptian society. When the researchers used this CT scanning to look at the bodies, and actually they couldn't look at the hearts most of the time because it turns out that most of these elites had their hearts removed before they were mummified. It was just part of the religious ritual. But they were able to look at the scan really down to their arteries. And then what they saw was they saw a lot of blockage in the arteries of these mummies. In fact, they found calcium gunk, which is, you know, what this blockage is made of, which is a common sign of heart disease, in 9 out of the 16 mummies, including 7 of 8 mummies who survived past age 45. Both sexes were affected too. They saw this almost equally in males and females.
Is that the only disease that they've found in these mummies?
Well, Rob, this is actually the latest in a string of forensic investigations that researchers have done into these really old mummies. Before the study, researchers have looked for signs of leprosy, signs of arthritis, and now they're looking for signs of heart disease. So it's really cool that we can go back even thousands of years and figure out what sort of conditions these people suffered from, even though in many cases they lived a much different lifestyle than we do today. And now with using the CT scan technology, researchers can look at things that used to be very invasive, you know, actually cutting these mummies open without having to be so invasive.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, speaking of understanding other cultures, how about understanding other cultures' languages? Take this example. You learn Spanish in school. You travel to Mexico, have a fine time understanding what everybody's saying, and you can speak the language fairly fluently. But then you go to Argentina, where some of the inflections and some of the pronunciations of some of the letters are different, and all of a sudden it almost feels like a foreign language to you. You can sort of pick out some of it, but the Spanish you're hearing is not as clear as it was in Mexico.
An accent.
Exactly. And this study is all about, is there a way to learn to get a better feel for these different accents, even though they all come from the same language? Is there a way to sort of train your brain to understand these other accents better?
So what did these researchers do?
Well, these researchers went to the movies. And their question was, if you hear what somebody's saying in an accent that's unfamiliar to you, but you can look at some sort of translation of what they're saying, will that help you better understand what they're saying? And let's take this example, Rob. If I say the word horf to you, horf, 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 and you go, what are you saying? And I tell you, hey, Rob, what I'm actually trying to say is horse. Instead of that F sound, when you hear me make an F sound, what I really mean to make is an S sound. And so you've started to decode my accent. You go, okay, every time Dave says something that ends in F, I'm going to remember that he actually means to say S. So when he says horf, I know he means horse. And when he says knife, he's actually saying nice. He's not saying knife, he's saying nice, because I've decoded that part of his language. And the researchers wanted to see, can use a movie to convey the same lesson. And what they did was, this is actually a Dutch study, and they had Dutch students watch Trainspotting, a movie with very heavy Scottish accents in it. And they also watched an Australian sitcom known as Kath and Kim, which has a very strong Melbourne accent in it. And what they did was, about half the students watched these movies with Dutch subtitles. So they were seeing the characters speak English with various accents, but there was a Dutch translation. And the other half of the students watched the movies with the English translation. And what they found is that the students that watched the movies with the English translation had a much better time after they had watched the movies decoding these accents when various words or phrases were played for them, you know, either in Australian or in Scottish.
Because they were able to do this decoding rather than looking at a translation in their own language.
Exactly. So instead of watching Trainspotting and seeing the translation in Dutch, where they would really just be focusing on this Dutch translation, they wouldn't really be paying that much attention to the English. If they're looking at the English translation, they're going, oh, okay, I know some English. So for example, if the Dutch student is watching Kath and Kim with these heavy Australian accents, and they hear something like this,
straight away,
which is actually this Australian woman saying straight away. And after the movie they were played, this sound clip, also spoken by an Australian speaker,
caveman,
they're much more likely to know that that word is caveman than if they'd just seen the translation for straight away in Dutch. And the reason is because they are making the right associations between the sounds in those words or that word and what the word actually is.
So I guess for the podcast, I shouldn't put on any strange English accent?
Not unless our listeners have subtitles, Rob.
Okay. So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about new insights into Down syndrome, and also a story that answers the question, can we throw so much money at the AIDS epidemic that we can actually stop it? And the answer, surprisingly, seems to be yes. And for the science policy blog, Science Insider, we've got a lot of stories this week on climate change. We've got the Copenhagen Climate Conference coming up, and we've got stories about what sort of influence President Obama could have over global climate change policy, and a bunch of other stories about climate change policy as well. So be sure to check out all these items on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.